Hey everyone, welcome back to Hysteria Radio. I'm your host, Joe Fusaro, and today, as usual, we're talking expressive arts and mental health. Today's guest, really interesting and extremely creative guy. His name is Jason Payden. I met him up at the NAMI Mental Health Conference up in Albany, New York last year. And there's so many different things. I went up there for Mental Health Now. I went up there for the Mental Health Conference. I went up there for the Teens Mental Health Weekend. So I just got them all confused in that real quick. But the NAMI Yearly Mental Health Conference up in Albany, New York State. And we were in the same session. We both gave presentations. And I checked out his work after, and he's a really creative guy. He has an amazing way of getting his thoughts and turning them into visual arts. He's also doing a bunch of other things in advocacy and creativity. He started a project called Mental Healthy, and you know, we'll get into all the stuff later and how you could find his work. But let me introduce to you Jason Payden. How you doing, Jason?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thank you for having me on. It really means a lot.
Well, we're glad you could be here. You know, like I said to you earlier, I saw your Facebook post a few weeks ago, and I could really relate to it because you came on and you said, listen, like, I feel like I've done some good work in the mental health community. Like, you guys are all doing great work. And you just said, but I want to do more. And I'm at this point now where, you know, I don't know what to do, but I know I want to do more. And I think I've been in that same spot so many times because, you know, on the mental health advocacy scene, and I think most advocacy and you know, where people work for foundations or organizations mostly, or even with schools, these things come in waves. The presentations come in waves. The mental health month, you know, comes in a wave. And then there's these long, like, two-month-long lulls where it's like, all right, like, we were all talking about it. Now what happened?
Right.
And I really appreciate that you put yourself out there and said, listen, like, what can we all do? Did you get any good feedback on that video?
Yeah, actually, I did. I was really happy with the amount of people and the suggestions that people really started kind of stepping up to the plate and really kind of rallying around that idea of working together and really trying to make a difference. I think we're all kind of feeling like, wouldn't it be nicer if the world was a little bit happier and healthier, maybe? And you know, and what can we do to work towards that goal? Or people are already doing a lot towards that, but how can we amp that up and really, you know, increase the progress? You know, I think it's important right now.
And I was really impressed that you raised a question too, rather than claiming that you have the answer. Because I think there's a lot But I think there's a lot of people out there, you know, they're either, you know, pushing their organization or, you know, this, you know, thing that you could do, this, like, you know, 10-week program, and then, you know, you'll feel all better kind of deal. And I don't know if having the answer is always the answer. Like, sometimes, you know, like, let's just bring up the question and let's sit on the question and then see what happens rather than claiming to have the answer, like, you know, right then and there. And I just thought that was really cool. It was a very interesting way of approaching that topic.
Thanks, Joe. And I've got to your point, one of my beliefs is that the answer that might have worked for me in my recovery might not work for somebody else, because we are all individuals, psychologically, biologically, you know, chemically. We're a lot alike as human beings, but there's a lot of parts of us that are very unique and individualized. So the answers don't always match up person by person by person. But I think the answers, I personally believe, I have a lot of hope that I think the personal answers for recovery for each individual is out there somewhere. And I think we can all find that maybe.
I hope. That's, yeah. Yeah. Or at least, you know, get on that path and provide that ability, you know, and that's the same thing. And it's funny because sitting here today, I still have trouble believing that everyone could feel better and recover. And I think that's because I doubted myself so much. You know, I doubted so, and I don't, it's funny. I have more belief in others to get better. And I still, like, deep down, like, I have this feeling like I can't do it or couldn't do it. And then I look at progress I've made, you know, in the last 5 or 10 years. And I'm like, oh wait, I'm like, no, it's okay. Like we can feel better, you know, complete recovery, who knows, but if I can find enough positive things to keep me busy or I don't know. How do you feel about that as far as, you know, with your story, what are the things that helped you? And I'm not asking because those things will definitely help someone else, but like what happened to get that ball rolling where you're like, oh, you know, these things do help and I don't have to be unhappy right now.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I get that a lot. Like, what's the main driving force that kind of led me to get to where I thankfully got to today, which is a place kind of where I kind of like to call mental healthy, right? It's like it's kind of a made up word or whatever. And I certainly didn't even make it up. A dear friend of mine actually helped me kind of coin that phrase, and I'm so appreciative of him for doing that. But I like it. I like that term mental healthy because it just feels good. It's not perfection, but it's a direction. It's a direction and towards a happier kind of existence for myself. So what was that motivate that to your question? What kind of carried me through? Because Joe, I had a lot of moments like that as well. Of course, when you're dealing with mental health issues, you doubt a lot. You think you go through hope. Many people go through hopeless phases. I mean, that's like depression right there. And you go through these dark, perilous places that sometimes that just, it feels like it's impossible. And so what was the thing that kind of pushed me through those moments when I was in my darkest hours? It was my wanting to run away from the pain, honestly. And just, it was that's what motivates me. Sometimes people are motivated by, they want something positive. Other people are motivated by running from pain. And I realize this about myself. I'm a runner. I run from pain. That's what motivated me to kind of really work as hard as I possibly could, as much as I possibly could with my healthy obsession with happiness. And like, I was trying to get to that so that I was not miserable or as miserable as I was maybe before. So I would just keep working, keep looking for answers online. I would keep talking to doctors. I would keep talking to professionals. I would keep talking to other people and try to keep seeking those answers in order to save myself from that misery of major mental illness, which is what I was diagnosed with back in my 20s.
What were your diagnoses at the time?
It's basically the aspects of schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, bipolar 1, wrapped up into a nice label, quote unquote nice label.
Yeah.
Schizoaffective disorder. So
that's actually from age 25 to 29. I had that same diagnosis, and they found out it was one of the meds that had pushed it to that point. And now still today, bipolar 1 with anxiety, but I definitely understand the symptoms. It's just, there's so many ways you could tweak and twist these diagnoses around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally understand the symptoms, and that's tough. That is one of the toughest because there's a lot of information out there for people with bipolar. And I guess there's a little bit of information out there for people with schizophrenia, but I don't think anyone really understands schizoaffective at all.
Yeah, and, the combination.
And it was scary for me because I could even tell, you know, with the state I was in when I was in the hospital, that I didn't even really think the doctors totally understood it. And that made me really nervous, you know. And I totally understand that diagnosis. And
I've got to tell you that, like back in my 20s, because I'm 44 now. So back in I was around 25 when I was diagnosed with that. I didn't know anybody who had schizoaffective back then. Personally, of course, I wasn't mingling with people out in public like I am today, talking about my mental health stuff. I was hiding a lot back then, hiding from people, and I was ashamed, and it was hard. But today, working with the public, like I did as a peer advocate and with New York Connects for a while, connecting people with mental health disabilities with services in their community. That's what I did with New York Connects. Little plug to New York Connects there. I realized that schizoaffective disorder today is being diagnosed much more prevalently than it was back then. So it's almost like, it almost seems like it's like within the last decade or two, it seems like it's a new thing it's not new, but that is being diagnosed more often, I guess.
Yeah. And the impression I got when I was in the hospital is they were almost like, oh, do we even diagnose him with this? Because, you know, it could lead to all these other problems in his social life. You know, if people find out that, you know, anything like, you know, in the schizo realm of diagnoses. And I almost felt like they were, instead of just addressing what they saw, they were like thinking about my future. And that's what scared me. I was like, wait a second. I was like, just tell me what I have, you know, like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, if somebody had some kind of physical illness, they wouldn't like tell them it was something less just to make them feel better, you know? And,
wow.
Yeah.
That must have been scary for you.
It was scary. Yeah. It was a really scary time, but,
Cause it's almost like, oh, it's so bad, we don't want to tell them, kind of thing that you're left with that feeling after they tell you that. And it's like, just to make things scarier.
And I think the whole world of mental health diagnoses, you know, there's really no other illness or condition in the world, you know, physical wise, that there are options of diagnosis, you know. Well, the test result says this, and you know, the scan says this, and the blood work says that, and this is what you have. And with mental health, it's just like, we're gonna check boxes, and then when we get a new story or we see a new symptom, we're going to check another box, and it's like this long, drawn out process. How did you during this time, like, what happened where you were like, I'm going to turn to my creativity to like help me through this, or at least I don't want to say that that's like, you know, the savior, but maybe it was something to help you just pass the time. Cause I know for me, it was just like, all right, I'm going to maybe write a little music once a week so I don't have to feel this pain for a little while.
Yeah. There's something extremely cathartic about it, being able to express yourself creatively. And I, even before I was diagnosed in my late teens to early 20s, I created a 9-hole transportable miniature golf course that was built off of a horse trailer, and it was a castle, and you could go inside and outside. I'm still very proud of that thing. But it was my mania that built it. It was my mania that built that. That, and actually, I mean, so bad. Sometimes excessive spending is often associated with mania. And I actually went into bankruptcy because I spent so much money wildly on this project that I was so obsessed with. And I'm so proud of it. And yet at the same time, I'm not proud of that part where it really kind of devastated me financially. But I think that's important for people to know that mania, you know, you do things in excess sometimes and you feel like invincible and like that there aren't any consequences. And you feel so powerful, like, oh, I'll figure this all out without thinking that well, this wonderful castle is amazing and people were enjoying it because it was like a little business, but I was going into significant debt and I made some poor financial decisions as a result. So yeah, I had to file bankruptcy. And now, you know, I hesitate a little bit because I'm saying this on radio and these are often things that people hide, but heck, mental illness is often times things that are hidden from people and the people in your lives. So I don't think it does anybody a service for me not to talk about that. If that can help somebody out there who might be feeling, you know, maybe that's one of the symptoms that they're going through right now with mania, maybe they're spending too much money and they hear me say that, and if that brings them an awareness to go to a doctor, that's a good thing. So
there's no guilt and shame in anything that anybody had done in their past, you know, because they were suffering, you know, if anything, sure. It's the way that you came out of it and learned from it. I mean, to give you an example,
thank you.
Joe, you're welcome. At, you know, in my late 20s, I traveled a lot. Didn't really enjoy any of the trips that I was on. Don't really remember mm-hmm. a lot of the trips that I was on. But wow, when I came home, I didn't have enough money to pay my rent. I didn't have enough money to pay my car payment. I didn't have enough money to eat. I was about $20,000 and probably more, but we'll go with 20 yeah. right now in credit card debt, which was, you know, credit card debt. It was 20 something percent a month. So that was climbing by the thousands every month with late payments and everything. And I had nothing to show for that money. And when I got back from the traveling and I started going through my receipts one day and, you know, in like a manic state, it wasn't very organized, like accounting. Mm-hmm. Sure. It was like I had receipts all over my room and, you know, and I'm going through them and I'm seeing I'm seeing hotel charge, plane charge, $250 smoking upcharge on the hotel room. Cause I was just going into hotel rooms, lighting up cigarette, like didn't care, you know? And, so yeah, it's that part of your brain during the mania that you're just like, money doesn't matter until you start getting the bills and,
and then the consequences.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then all it does instead where the normal person would go into or normal, I hate you that word, but you know what I mean? Where the average person without mania would go into this mode where, all right, I need to get another job or I need to, you know, consolidate my debt. You know, they start going into like how I could fix this mode, you know, with the mania, we just go into super mania. Like like these stressful life events, you know, there's no way to buckle down and just take care of it. And I think that's what the average person without a mental health diagnosis doesn't understand is that, you know, they're looking at you like, well, you better, you know, people start giving you life lessons. Like, well, you better get your act together, Sonny. And it's like, no, you don't understand. Right. Like my brain doesn't have the capacity right now to get things together. And until we stop looking at the things on the surface and stop me because I'm going to blabber on all day, but looking at these things on the surface, like, you know, my kid's got bills or my friend's got bills, you know, and start looking like, oh, like he's got something that he needs help with rather than on the outside, people getting mad at the bills and confused by the way you're acting. Right. Like we need to, as a society, get to a place where we realize like, oh, like this guy needs help. Like my friend needs help. Yeah. Or my family member needs help. Like he doesn't need like life lessons and to be scolded right now.
Exactly. And that's what I'm hoping that, so it's about building awareness for people who maybe aren't aware that that is actually a symptom of, or that person might be symptomatic. And so that's what you're doing. Your work is doing with this podcast is helping people become more aware of that. So it's great.
Yeah, that's we're trying. We're trying.
Yeah, definitely. That's what it's all about, man.
So how'd you get from that to Jason his quirks? Because I think at least from what I see, that might have been a turning point for you where you were able to start recognizing things in your diagnosis that were able to help you like change maybe like your patterns of living.
You're right. So the castle, like I said, was about 20. I was around, I think I used that until I was about 20. I was diagnosed and everything. I went through all my hardships, and then the castle was destroyed by a winter. We had winter storms and it got destroyed, and I didn't have any money at that point to fix it back up and stuff. So then fast forward through my I was hospitalized and things were starting to slowly improve. My recovery took a long, you know, it took 15, 20 years really till I got to where I was happier to say that I was in a more comfortable recovery state. But it was about, I don't know, my quirks were maybe about 12 years ago when all of a sudden I came up with this idea, because with my castle, I had done Halloween productions and I used to love Halloween because it was very theatrical. I like to create things with my hands. I could create special effects and I do multimedia work with my videos and stuff, but I also like making live productions and doing, like I said, special effects, sound effects, different things like that. So Halloween was perfect because I could do these little fun family oriented Halloween productions and people would come to it. We'd have a lot of people come to it in our little town of Schoharie. And that was really popular and fun. And it became very nostalgic for me as time went on. So as I fast forward past the castle and past into my recovery to about 12 years ago, I loved Halloween characters like vampires, witches, and things like that. Cause you know, not because I'm into that dark stuff, but because they are fantasy oriented. Yeah. And I was living in a fantasy world most of my life. but I was like, I just don't like the idea of, I like vampires. I think they're cool and they've got all these cool powers, but I don't like the darkness behind them. So I was like, what if I created a little vampire that was actually cute and he was actually afraid of the dark? He was afraid of the dark. And that's kind of a metaphor there too. So I created Bats. He was my first character. And then I created Whimsy, who is my little witch who flies around on her magic broom, but also can't stop cleaning with them. And I realized that, oh my gosh, if I base these off of these symptoms that I'd been experiencing for a long time, actually, at that point, then maybe, I wonder who else I'll make. And I ended up making, I think there's 13 or 14, I always forget if there's 13 or 14, because sometimes I include myself in one of the characters, so I got to count them, but I think there's about 13 of them. And each one is a different symptom, major symptom from what I've experienced with my mental health in the past. And they've been a slow development through the years. And finally, over the last maybe 4 years, I figured out how to animate them. And because I would draw them, but then I figured out, and prior to that, probably about 10 years, about maybe about 8 years ago, I figured out how to do the voices for them with a computer. And I do the voices for all of them. And like I mentioned a little bit to you before, I'm thinking about doing a podcast, a family fun story oriented podcast about these characters. And I'm also making the videos too. But like I also said, video work as one person, that's a lot of animation to do for 14 characters.
It's a lot of work. The video, the sound, the writing. I mean, the camera. Yeah. You're the guy for everything. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you go into a studio for that stuff and they have, you know, 50 people doing one show. So that's...
I've always loved Walt Disney. Walt Disney himself. Like I read his biography. I've always been fascinated by him. I always loved who he was. And I always aspired one day to be the mental healthy Walt Disney someday. Awesome. And so through the years, these characters kind of came to life.
I could see that. I could already see it, man. And I know that that'll happen, you know, in some way, shape or form that you're not only going to do this for you, but I think you're going to help others bring things to life that, you know, maybe they could only picture in their head or only get down on paper. You know, I think you're going to help a lot of people, you know, bring their visions to life over the years, for sure.
That's cool. Thank you. And the, as these are my quirks, and like I said, there are a lot of them because they are, because I had a lot of symptoms with schizoaffective disorder. But one nice thing about that is that it allowed me to, there's a perspective, and it allowed me to have more more of an understanding of other people when I worked with them later on with New York Connects and as a peer advocate, because I've been through so many symptoms, I could relate to a lot of different people. And no matter what they're dealing with, whether they're dealing with anxiety or maybe they're dealing with a depression or maybe OCD or this, that, or the other. So it's, in that sense, it's been a gift. And I really hope that I can, one of my projects that I'm working on is the Quirk Shop. And it's a quirk shop is where I help people figure out their quirks and create a character based off of their stuff. Because it kind of, there's something cathartic about it. When you create these characters, you know, they don't have to be an animator, but when you put it into a character, you take something that maybe you, that I hated about myself, and I turned it into a lovable character. There's something healing about that.
Yeah.
There's something healing about that. So I want to create, try to help other people with the quirk shops on the road.
That's awesome. That's the whole like awareness factor of that, that you were able to see these different parts of yourself come through and then find an awareness. 'Cause my big self-care thing is meditation, and my listeners are probably nice. Tired of hearing that, but it's, you know, I took meds, you know, in the hospital and still am on something today, but yeah. I felt like those kind of stopped anything, any of my symptoms from getting worse. And, you know, the writing always helped, but like the meditation enabled me to quiet my mind and calm my body in a way that I'd never been able to before. And that's when I started noticing these different parts of myself, kind of like how you know, did this creatively with visual arts. Like, you know, the meditation is where I recognized parts of me that I was like, well, you know, the angry me, like I don't need him anymore, you know, or the fearful me, like, I just don't need that part of me anymore. I was able to like let these things go. And I see a lot of that when I watch the Quirks, like it reminded me like, oh, this is how, you know, in meditation, I was able to recognize these different parts of me that I didn't need anymore.
That's amazing, Joe. And that actually completely inspires me to actually work more. I've dabbled with meditation, but it's been a while.
And it's hard at the beginning. It's not, you don't just sit down and, you know, so I could see why people stop for sure. But yeah, after a couple months, it starts getting easier. Yeah.
Wow. See this exchange, talking to each other, and just, you get ideas and answers from each other. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
This whole dynamic, it's just, It's a shame that so few people are afraid, or that so many people are afraid to talk at this point because of the stigma about mental health issues, even though it's changing. But and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get people to talk about a little bit more. But look at the healing and the information that comes just in that quick. Like, I'm going to try meditation now because that's you awesome. Said that. I think that's awesome. And who knows how that'll change my life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, hey, you know what? I got to a point where it was like, I'll try anything, you know?
Definitely.
I just want to feel alive again. I want to wake up in the morning and not, you know, feel sick or not feel like I shouldn't be here. And it was like, just, you know, like how you said you ran from the hospital. And, when you said that, all I could think about was, you know, I've heard people say before that they didn't get better because of the hospital. They got better in spite of the hospital. And when you were saying, and I don't know, I don't think that that's right or wrong, because either way, the hospital was the place where the process started.
Yes.
So whether you did it from or in spite of, that moment is still important in your life because that's when the change happened. So I guess, you know, people have good experiences there and some people don't. Yeah. And I really didn't. Sure. I had a couple okay experiences, then a bunch of bad experiences at the hospital. And it was really, I mean, I don't know if it, it I wouldn't say it was my fault, but I didn't have insurance. So, you know, they just send you wherever they send you, and you don't really have a choice with the doctors or any or meds or anything like that.
Yeah.
But when you said like you used to, you know, run from the hospital or run from, you know, your illness, I started thinking about how I did things in spite of my illness. And like, by opening up the conversation the way that you're doing and the way that we're trying to, you know, people can do less running and less doing things in spite of what's happening and more doing things just to feel better, to, you know, to live again, be happy.
I agree 1,000,000%. I mean, when I think of all the energy I wasted trying to hide my mental illness from other people back when I was so scared to talk about it. And I just, my biggest goal was to get through a social interaction without somebody noticing my symptoms. And when I think of all the energy I spent on that, and now somehow there was that flip, and I'm not exactly sure when that happened, but when I flipped that around, I think it was NAMI and Inner Own Voice, when they trained me to start talking about and start to do presentations for people. When I turned that around and I started talking to interested people about what I went through, and I saw that it actually did help not only me, but it helped the audience.
Yeah.
I realized, oh my gosh, I mean, I can spend all this energy in a positive way, telling other people and spreading the message, and we're both healing, me and the audience, or myself and the audience are healing in those moments when we talk about this, then that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. I want to use that energy in a good way.
That's awesome. NAMI, for people out there that may be listening that aren't affiliated with their local NAMI, NAMI, check it out, because I had the same experience with the ending the silence, you know, when I went to the high school talk, and I still do it today, but there's a huge, huge healing that goes on, not only with you, but when you help somebody else, you know, you both heal. And it's just,
absolutely. Yeah,
I give them full recommendation to, we'll do a NAMI shout out all day on Hysteria.
Definitely. So they've been very good to me. They've helped in so many ways. Yeah.
All right. So I want to get to, before we close out, I want to get to this video that you sent me on Mental Healthy TV on YouTube. So you guys definitely need to check that out. It's the early question that you sent me of when you, it's like a video that you made when you asked your family what would have helped you, you know, when I got diagnosed or when I was struggling. And the whole thing is good. You know, it's not that long, but it really puts it into perspective from the family side of things. And what your dad said, paraphrasing here, is what would have helped him was having someone like you when he was younger, you know, that talked about mental health, that was open about his experiences, and that he could see, like, all right, like, this is a good guy, and he's talking about it, and he can get through it, and things are going to be okay. And that was so powerful, because a lot of times we want to blame the families that they didn't do enough research, and they did, but you know what? They're only human too. And I think in the mental health community, a lot of times we play, you know, I'm going to disrupt some people when I say this, but like, sometimes I felt this way, at least. I don't want to say it for anyone else. I felt like I was playing the victim, you know, and it was because I was a victim of this terrible health condition, illness that had taken away like a lot of the best years of my life, what I felt. And I wasn't open to seeing, you know, how my family struggled. And I thought that they just all ran for the hills and didn't want anything to do with me. And granted, there's a lot of things that we all probably could have learned that would have made the process easier, but there's no use for me living my life like angry at my family and friends. And it's, you know, to see a video like that helps me put things into perspective. Like, you know, they didn't know what to do either. They had never dealt with somebody that had bipolar 1 or schizoaffective disorder. And, you know, they didn't go to med school to become a psychiatrist or a psychologist.
Right.
And
right.
Just this video was just powerful, man, because it showed like it put your parents in such a vulnerable state. And when your dad said, just having a friend like you or someone like you, I mean, how powerful was that? How did that make you feel?
It made me feel really incredible, because you just, and I'm getting a little emotional talking about it. That's how it made me feel. Very like a heart swell, like, wow, dad said that. And that's something that's something for me I've always wanted to hear. And my dad and I have a great relationship, and my parents we all have a great relationship now, but we've been through some stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not always been easy for them or me. And even though they've been completely supportive as much as they possibly can, to your point, but they're not trained. They don't know. Just like I'm learning about this every day, so are they.
Right.
And so a lot of mistakes will happen naturally, because we're human. And that's what happens when you're human. You know, and the mistakes are not bad things. They're all things to learn from. But to try to paint them in a perspective that, wow, they're trying anyways. They're trying the best that they can. Even on days when it doesn't seem like they're trying,
yeah,
I'm sure internally they're trying somehow. And just to get through. And so when dad said that, that was a very powerful moment for me to hear. And so I'm forever grateful that he did say it, that he felt it, and that I happened to be filming, you know, and then yeah. that I was able to capture that, and I can watch it over and over. But it's important. And, you know, not everybody has, I also want to make this, you know, our biological family, some of us are very fortunate to have most of our biological family in our lives, but not everybody has that. Mental illness can be very destructive. We all know this. But one thing is about the human condition, the human brain, the human beings, is that if we do not have biological families, maybe in the role that is as supportive as we need, we reach out for other people in our lives that kind of become surrogate family, right? And they are just as important. They are just, so family, it's a flexible term. It can be biological, and many times it is, but it's also the people you surround yourself with. They're your support. They're your team. That's Team Joe. That's Team Jason. The people that are around me.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's your family. So it's important to just try to, just speaking to the audience and anybody who might be struggling right now, try to reach out. If you don't have the biological family support in your life now, hopefully you will at some point, but if you don't right now, don't let that stop you, and reach out for people who can support you, because that's the real essence of family. It's not about chromosomes. It's about people that support and love you.
Wow.
I think.
I think you're right. I think that's, I can't think of a better way to end our conversation. That's, you know, like I said, go to Mental Healthy TV on YouTube, and check out this video where Jason talks to his family. Jason, why don't you take a minute and tell us how we can see your work, how we can contact you, how in any way that any links or emails or anything that you want to give out, you're welcome to give out now.
Thank you, Joe. I totally appreciate this opportunity in such a big way. This is my first podcast, so thank you.
Really?
Buddy.
Nice.
Really. Oh, my
awesome.
God.
Oh, I think there's going to be many.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. And I absolutely 1,000% appreciate this opportunity. If anybody's interested in going to my website, it's kind of my hub right now, and I hope to have a lot of projects off of that. That's at mentalhealthypresentations.com. So it's mentalhealthypresentations.com. And yeah, I'd love for people to go on there, and it talks about the presentations that I do. And pretty soon I'm going to reveal videos with my quirks and some interviews and things like that. And maybe even a podcast with their stories for families. So thank you, Joe.
Jason Payden, thank you very much. Thanks for coming on the show. I look forward to doing other presentations with you in the future and seeing more of your work. And yeah, we have a long way to go with this mental health thing, but it makes it easier when you work with good people like yourself. So thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Really. Thank you for the opportunity. This was fun.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, listeners, for Hysteria Radio and Mental Health News Radio Network. I'm your host, Joe Fusaro. And until next time, remember to keep the radio up, to keep the hysteria down.